Today on the 21st, a new report from Advance Illinois looks at the state of public education from kindergarten to after high school. And as temperatures drop, we'll hear how giving a coat to a child in need can boost self-confidence and school attendance, plus why it's important for kids to stay active even in this weather.
Building a snow van or doing a snow angel for 5 or 10 minutes helps to build that immune system and helps to have a better mental and physical ability once they re-enter the classroom.
Also, it's the 56-year students at U of I Snyder Hall are singing holiday music on demand to anyone who asks.
It's really cool to see how a lot of people from different backgrounds and different ages are all coming together to share the Christmas joy with people all over the world.
More than you could ever know. Make my wish.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned.
All I want for Christmas is you.
Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. I hope everyone is staying safe and warm today. We know that it's kind of treacherous out there on the roads. We're thinking about all the snowfall that we've gotten all across the state today. But when you think about winter, that can also be a difficult time for families in need who are braving the cold to take their children to school or local daycare programs. In a moment, we're going to be joined by two people from Champaign County's Head Start program to talk about how cold weather affects kids in their classrooms. But first, we wanted to start with Brock Clouser. He's the marketing director with Operation Warm. It's a national organization that gives brand new winter coats to children in need. Brock, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
How much do we have an idea of how many kids nationally or across Illinois need proper winter clothing and can't afford, and their families can't afford to buy it for them?
Yeah, in Illinois specifically, the poverty rate is about 20%. So 1 in 5 children are what we indicated living in needs, and our numbers indicate from recent data that that's roughly 600,000 children throughout the state.
And for you all, your organization is all about giving kids brand new winter coats. How do you guys go about doing that?
Yeah, so we work directly with manufacturers, both overseas and within the United States, to create our own line of winter coats made just for kids. And what we do is we take donations, monetary donations, from various organizations and individuals across the country, and we take those donations and turn them into new coats, which we provide to children across the country.
And I know part of your organization's message is that donating coats isn't just a practical need. It helps boost children's self-confidence and acceptance among their peers. What do you think is it specifically about receiving a new coat that helps, especially for young children, with their self-esteem?
Yeah, I think a lot of kids, you know, they have difficulty showing emotion and describing how they feel. And if they're from a family where they're in low income and they may not be able to get all the essentials they need, and you know, if they don't have new clothing, and they, that can really kind of affect how they perceive themselves and perceive themselves around other children. And to have something brand new, especially like a coat that you wear to school pretty much every day, half of the year, it can really assist in you know, self-esteem, pride and ownership, allowing you to get to school more often and play outside with your friends.
How do you all connect with children who need winter coats? What organizations do you guys work with?
Yeah, we work with organizations across Illinois. We have 45, I believe, partner programs this year, where we work directly with organizations. Like, it could be, you know, as small as a Rotary Club or a firefighter's house, up into Chicago Housing Authority, which helps 10,000 children every year. Work with them directly to fundraise, to get them coats, and then to give them out before, you know, hopefully before it gets too cold. But we still have some programs that are still in the middle of fundraising and giving out coats as we speak.
And what else have you guys also found in terms of coats in school attendance? How much does that make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked to some schools that we've worked with. I remember speaking with a woman at a school in New York last year where we gave a coat to every child in the school, and the entire school was a Title I low income, so all children were on 150% at or below the poverty level. And she said their last year they had the highest attendance they've ever had at that school, something over like 92% in the month of January and February, which before that was really unheard of.
And Brock, you said that it sounds like a lot of your fundraising efforts happen actually before winter. Do you still see a need for fundraising now this time of year?
Yeah, most definitely. We still have a handful of programs in Illinois that are still fundraising to try and meet their goal. Once that is achieved, then they'll be able to work with us to get coats directly to them and then give them out into schools in their area. So we still have a number of Illinois programs that can need help.
That's Brock Clauser. He's the marketing director with Operation Warm. We're going to tweet out more information about Operation Warm if you're interested in that. That'll be on our website as well. Brock, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
As we've been thinking about how this affects kids here, not just coats, this is the kind of temperature most of us want to stay locked up inside all day. But as we've been talking about, kids need to be outside. How do you balance that, especially with children who may not have proper winter clothing? Joining us now is Michael Hoag and Jackie Buckingham. They're from Champaign County's Head Start program. Michael is an offsite program manager. Jackie's a mentor and family child care with the program. Jackie, Michael, thanks for being with me.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on this beautiful sunny day.
Sunny and very cold, right? Now, Michael, what extra efforts do you all make to ensure that your children, you work with lots of young kids across Champaign County, Head Start children, what efforts do you make sure, do you all do to make sure that children actually are able to get to daycare when the weather's like this?
Well, we start early on by having an orientation with the families, letting them know that it's important to have those extra clothes. And we do this in August and September for those days where the kids may be just playing in the water play, but they get wet. And so this leads on through October, November, December, when it becomes more important that the families are dressing their children warmly, not only at home, but then having those extra clothes for them to have at school. We're unlike the school districts and all in the fact that we are fortunate to have school bus service that goes door to door. So it's the children, those 3 to 5 year olds that are waiting for the bus, don't have to go to maybe a corner to wait with the other children for, 15 or 20 minutes. They get door to door service. We ask the families to walk their children to and from the bus, to sign them out, help them up the steps because, this time of year, especially, this morning, this is the first snow really of the year. And so there's, we're tracking in ice and things like that. So those little things that we just need to be cognizant of, and that carries us throughout the entire winter.
And Jackie, Michael was just saying how much you all work with your families at the beginning of the year. Do you get to this time of year and notice some families maybe don't have proper winter clothing for some of the kids? Is that something that you notice when the kids start coming into classrooms?
Yeah, especially this first, when it
Past week or two.
Yeah, the first bad snowstorm, usually no one's really prepared, but it's also not just families that maybe are in need, but it's a cultural thing, too. We have so many different cultures in this area that it's part of a teacher's job or a provider's job to educate those families on what you're going to do. So I think when, like Michael said, when we first do our orientation at the beginning of the year, we talk about we will go out in the winter weather. And these are the things we'd like you to have. And if they don't have them, most of our teachers and providers are really good scavengers. They collect things.
Well, that's what I was wondering. How does it work for you all with Head Start if you need coats or gloves? I mean, there's a lot of different things. It's not just coats, right?
Right.
Unfortunately, we are federally funded, and that's a good thing and a bad thing as well. So those funds are determined to go for the entire program. So it's very difficult for us to say this family is in need of a coat and use those federal funds to actually purchase those coats and all. So we do rely a lot on community members, the Lions Club, the Junior League, the Rotary. Walmart has given to our program. Meijer has given. So we do rely on those people within the community to sometimes step up and help us provide for these families.
Well, and when we think about particularly, Jackie, when we're thinking about this time of year and expenses for families, A lot of times I know when you're on a limited income, you're thinking about paying for your utility bill. You're paying for your, that's mm-hmm. going to be your highest probably expenses time of year, then food. How often do you think that, is that something that you feel like a lot of families are juggling, particularly among your students? Are you all seeing that this time of year?
Oh, yes. I have some of my providers who have already purchased warm shoes for their children. For the children in their care. So they actually spend their own money. Teachers will go to Goodwill or whatever and shop on the weekends and bring in stuff. And then we'll also ask other families, you know, to donate their stuff when their children grow out of it. So we accept a lot of donations from all sorts of different parents and organizations throughout our area.
Yeah, our families, you know, really struggle. 90% of the Head Start and Early Head Start families are at poverty or below. That is, we are mandated by the federal government to give priority to those families first. And so you're absolutely correct. You know, is it, you know, are we going to pay the electric bill? Or are we going to put food on the table? And sometimes those things such as coats and the shoes and the socks and all, those come last.
Now, that said, you all work with very young children. I imagine when you're talking about 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, it's really important for you guys to have them outside during the day, too.
It's very important. We want to provide a culture of safety and good health. And part of that is going outside 365 days a year. Of course, you know, on days like today where we may have some warnings, some freezing rain and snow and things like that, then that's a call that the site managers and the teachers certainly make. But we know by studies show that, you know, children that go outside and are getting the germs and the bacteria in a natural way from the soil, from the grass, from the leaves, and just from the air, are apt to have a more high immune system. And so we see that those children as adults don't have the allergies and the respiratory illnesses that other adults have.
So, and how do you handle it this time of year, Jackie? What's the temperature where you say it's too cold to go out?
Well, I would think if the wind chill, it would depend on the wind chill. Mm-hmm. So if the wind chill is down, you know, close to the negatives, then we would say no. So 32 degrees, definitely for infants and toddlers, is probably the cutoff for young children. Then for your older kids, I would say it has to do a lot with the wind chill and how cold it is outside.
And so what do you guys do, like on a day like today, what do you do with the kids?
We would go outside. 32 degrees is not just, it's black and white. We can have 32 degrees, and like Jackie was saying, we can have a wind chill of, you know, negative 10. We're not going to go outside. But on a sunny day when it's 32 degrees and the snow has just fallen, there's no better teaching opportunity to let the kids go out and explore the snow, explore the melting icicles, look at, the way the ice is melting on the ground, and, and just become one with nature. And I was out running this morning, and about 5:30 it was still clear, and it was a little boring. And even for a 50-year-old, when it started snowing at 5:45, it's like, okay, this isn't so bad. This is, you know, I think I can do my extra, you know, mile or two. And so it's the same way with the kids. They are excited about going out. A lot of times it's the teachers that don't really want to go outside.
To be fair, I imagine the kids come back in, they're probably going to be wet, like,
yes,
on a day like today. Jackie, how do you handle that? If their clothes are wet, how do you guys handle that with your Head Start classrooms?
Well, we have extra clothes. We try to get parents to bring extra clothes. If not, we have a stockpile of extra clothes and socks for them. Our sites and our homes are all very lucky because we have washers and dryers. So
just pop a lot of things in the dryer.
Right.
Then.
So when I was an infant toddler teacher, we would just prop everything in the dryer and dry it all. So they went home with nice dry clothes at the end of the day.
And if the children don't go outside during the day, how tough is it to be in daycare programs if they're getting a little antsy?
They get very bored very easy. They get loud. And you know what? If they're not out, that's one of the major reasons why you should go out, is because there's so many germs inside in the wintertime with the heat up. And so going outside is also really, really good health precaution because it helps kids get out, get fresh air in their system, and get rid of any of those germs that they might be carrying around. Mm-hmm. So it gets really, really a little crazy inside when they don't get a chance to go out and just be free and run.
And it's a very good point. You know, my mom, my grandmother said, you know, you go outside, you're going to catch your death of cold. And that's not necessary. We know better now. You know, we know that the germs are multiplying inside the classrooms, and the chance for the kids to go out and get the fresh air, it really kills these bacteria and germs. The first thing we do if we have an outbreak of the flu or a cold is, you know, of course, disinfect the classroom, but we also open the windows, get some fresh air moving throughout the classrooms.
So last question for you guys. We've been talking about, we started this conversation talking about children in need. You've talked about how you've worked with families. It's a priority for you all with all of your Head Start kids to have them outside. Do you all still, are you all still in a situation this time of year where you need donations?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Our school... school year runs from the end of August until middle of May, and we're constantly trying to refill our coats, not only coats, but socks, because kids' feet get wet, and we want to change those socks, boots, shoes, scarves, mittens, hats. 90% of your body temperature is going to be lost through the top of your head, so we want all of those things, so yes.
Important things to think about this time of year. Thanks to Champaign County Head Start, Michael Hogue and Jackie Buckingham for joining us. We'll have, if you are interested in helping, we'll have all of that information on our website. We'll tweet that out as well. If you follow 21ST Show or go to 21stshow.org, lots of information about places that are accepting donations for coats this time of year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Is Illinois' education system on track? That's the question asked by Advance Illinois. And the answer, low-income students in Illinois remain well behind their wealthier peers in K-12 schooling. They're less likely to have proficient reading skills by the time they reach fourth grade. And when they're older, they're less likely to be college ready or to complete a post-secondary degree. The report was released by the Education Advocacy Group in Chicago last week. Today and tomorrow, members of Advance Illinois are presenting these findings to different community groups in Springfield and Bloomington. To learn more, we're joined now by Ginger Ostro. She's Executive Director of Advance Illinois. And Harry Berman, he's a board member of Advance Illinois. He's also the former Executive Director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Both of them are with us from our partner station, WUIS in Springfield. Ginger, Harry, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ginger, there's a lot of troubling statistics in the report, but I wanted to start with that one about fourth graders, that only 20% of low-income students in Illinois are reading proficient. That's 35 percentage points lower than their more affluent peers. Do we know why this gap exists?
Well, we think it's really important to highlight the challenges between low-income students and their wealthier peers. As we prepared this report, what we saw was the trend over the last 10 years has been fairly flat, that we haven't seen much progress. And we have seen this huge gap that you mentioned between wealthier students and low-income students. And one of the really troubling things that we found in this report is that the number of low-income students and the number of low-income students over 50% in school districts has spread across the state. So nearly 43% of school districts in the state are serving low-income students, where over 50% of their students come from low-income families. So I think we want to start by framing what the challenge is that school districts really are facing and how broad and how widespread this challenge is.
Right, because do you think, Ginger, across Illinois, typically we've tended to think, well, the problem with low-income students exists only in Chicago and not across the rest of the state?
I think folks have historically thought about low-income students as being an urban issue in Chicago or other urban areas around the state. And one of the really significant findings of this report is how that has really spread. In 2005, only 13% of school districts had more than 50% of their students coming from low-income families. 10 years later, in 2015, as I mentioned, 43% of school districts are seeing that number of low-income students. And that means the challenges that the school districts are facing, the services they need to provide, the resources that they need to better serve those students are really important, and that need has really spread across the state.
Harry, when we're thinking about that, is this, like, so we're thinking about what we've seen in Illinois, more low-income students spread across more districts across the state. This isn't just a problem in cities. We're seeing this in rural areas as well. Is this consistent with what we're seeing in other states and across the country? How does Illinois rank when we're looking at low-income students? Do we have more?
Well, we have a significant number of low-income students. And I really can't speak to the comparative data across other states. But I have to underscore what Ginger just said about how astonished we all were to discover that 43% of the school districts in Illinois have 50% or more low-income students, and the significant increase that has occurred compared to 10 years ago.
Mm. And Ginger, when we think about that, Do you have a sense that school districts are prepared to meet the needs of low-income students? It sounds like this is something that's a problem that is a new problem, so I wonder how prepared schools are.
Well, it's certainly a problem that has spread dramatically over the last 10 years. But what we do know is that to effectively serve students coming from low-income families, school districts need more resources. And we also know that Illinois has a broken funding system. And so instead of providing more resources, for school districts that need more, we actually provide less. In fact, a national education group ranked states and looked at how much more they invest in their low-income students compared to non-low-income students. And where, for example, Ohio, which is the best in the country, provides $1.22 for school districts to serve, for example, to serve low-income students compared to $1 for non-low-income students. In Illinois, we rank last, and we only provide 81 cents for every dollar we spend on non-low-income students. So not only do we have a problem that's spread and is more school districts are facing it, we have a funding system in Illinois that is exactly upside down and provides fewer resources where they're needed even more.
And when we say more resources are needed, I wonder if either of you can weigh in here about, when we're looking particularly at low-income students, what kind of resources are most effective to helping lower students that come from lower-income families catch up with their wealthier peers?
Nyla, I wanted to mention that one of the things I really appreciate about Advance Illinois and why I'm keen to be a board member is that the organization has a double perspective on just the very issue that you mentioned, that is how we improve educational outcomes for low-income students. On the one hand, there's the matter that Ginger just talked about. We have to do things at the state level in terms of the funding of education. And yes, that would mean additional investment of dollars. But at the same time, Advance Illinois understands that a lot of the work that is needed to improve educational outcomes occurs at the community level, and that bringing people together at the community level is one of the things that that they encourage. So, for example, in Springfield, we have our education collaborative, which is called the Continuum of Learning, that involves the Community Foundation of the Land of Lincoln, the Chamber of Commerce, the United Way, and UIS as lead partners. And we've outlined a series of steps that we think need to be taken in this area in order to ratchet up the educational attainment of the more disadvantaged students.
Yeah, Harry, let's talk about Springfield for a minute. What are those steps that you all are taking, what you think needs to be taken in Springfield, particularly to help that student population?
We call this initiative Sangamon Success, and it involves interventions that are evidence-based. In other words, demonstrated to be effective across the country, and at from the prenatal age through high school. So, for example, we're on a path to increase the amount of high-quality, effective early home visiting here, starting with prenatal level, especially focusing on first-time moms. We're on a path to increase high-quality preschool and child care programs in our area and with associated interventions that have been demonstrated to be effective. We're working on taking the best models for effective mentoring, which has been shown to be so important for children in the middle school years, and expanding them in our region. And then we want to take steps to ensure that a larger proportion of students not only graduate from high school, but graduate from high school college and career ready. And that might mean expansion of dual course offerings and also work-based learning experiences in high school.
I'm speaking with Harry Berman. He's a former executive director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. He's a board member of Advanced Illinois. He's been sharing with us efforts in Sangamon County as we've been talking about ways to improve educational outcomes for children. Ginger Ostro is also with us. She's executive director of Advanced Illinois. Harry, can we start with early childhood? We talked about this a couple weeks ago. We talked about the gap particular that we're seeing with preschoolers. We talked about how there's not enough preschool seats available for low-income students throughout the states. I know, for example, in the suburbs, we've seen the greatest in the Cook County suburbs, we've seen the greatest shortfall in the state in terms of seats that are available. With what the work that you're doing with Springfield in the Sangamon County area, do you feel like it has to start with early childhood education? You outlined a couple steps there. How crucial is it that efforts and involvement and investment happens at early childhood?
Well, Nyla, we know from extensive research that for children to be kindergarten ready, there has to be interventions for the more disadvantaged students that start with the moms while they're pregnant. And we're on a path here in Springfield with tremendous support from the business entities here in town to expand interventions for those pregnant moms and children up through age 2. And we're looking forward to an announcement about that later in the spring. So it's critically important. And, you know, Nyla, it's interesting that just this week, the University of Chicago released a report about the long-term, and here I'm talking about 20-30 year impact of high quality interventions for children from birth through age 5. Another report from the wonderful Nobel laureate James Heckman.
And Ginger, when we're thinking about that, I'm coming back to then thinking about the current group of fourth graders. When we're looking at 20% of low income fourth graders being reading proficient, when we think about that population now, how does that translate if you are not reading at the level that you should be in fourth grade? What are the chances then for those students, these current fourth graders now, for their high school graduation and their future educational achievements?
Well, as we outline in the report, there are several key milestones, all of which are linked, as you are alluding to, which is we want children to be reading at fourth grade because we know at that point children have to go from learning how to read in order to reading in order to learn their other subject areas. So reading is really important at fourth grade. Then we look at other benchmarks like eighth grade math, because we know that children need to be performing math at eighth grade in order both to be ready for high school, but also to be ready for things like the ACT and other measures that will determine if children are ready for college. And so we look at that measure as well, how many students are college ready. And then as you carry that through, children who are college ready are more likely to complete post-secondary degree or credentials. So we want to see that linkage. And unfortunately, in each of these metrics, just like in fourth grade, we see that low-income students are performing behind their wealthier peers. And so we look at all of the different milestones and want to push the whole system up to ensure that we're best serving those students.
And Ginger, you mentioned math. Harry, go ahead. Did you want to add something?
I wanted to make a comment about college ready. Now, I know that from reading the report, you saw that we have had good improvement in the numbers of students who are graduating high school in Illinois. That's a good news story. On the other hand, only 38% of Illinois high school graduates are actually scoring, this would be on the ACT, as being college ready. So that's a disturbing number. Now, Advanced Illinois was central to a piece of legislation that went through last year called the Post-Secondary and Workforce Readiness Act that aims at kind of aligning high school opportunities for education with what's needed in college. In other words, establishing transitional college courses so that more students will be college ready.
Well, yeah, what does that mean, Harry? When you say students are not college ready, what does that mean?
Well, it means that when they arrive at the colleges and universities and they take their placement tests, far too many of them are scoring low enough that they get channeled into remedial courses. So students in remedial courses are not earning credits toward their college degrees, be it an associate degree or a baccalaureate degree. Now, we in the universities, and here I'm speaking about my former role, we have responsibilities towards students in that arena, and there are things that we can do to keep students on track. But it's far better and far more efficient to have the students actually graduate from high school being college ready, and transitional courses can help with that.
I know that when we're talking about being college ready, you all in your report, Harry, highlights particularly Rockford, what the city of Rockford is doing in terms of trying to help students transition from high school to college successfully. Can you share a little bit about Alignment Rockford and the kind of work that they're doing to try to help solve this?
What we've seen, and we do highlight a number of communities that are having success throughout the report, and what we've seen that's happening in Rockford as well as the other communities that we highlight is that there's partnership with business, community organizations, and education really coming together to see what is needed in their community to help children succeed. And in Rockford, what they found was that by really doing more project-based learning, by bringing what's needed in business, bringing it into the classroom, making the classroom more hands-on, that has really helped children be ready to succeed in college or in careers, whatever path they're going to choose.
One of the components of the Post-Secondary and Workforce Readiness Act is to encourage districts across the state to create more opportunities like the ones that Rockford has established, work-based learning experiences.
One quick question for you. We've just got a minute or two before we take a break, but it sounds like as we're talking about all of these programs, it sounds like the most effective outcomes you all are seeing to help improve, particularly when we're looking at lower-income students, is partnerships that don't rely on the state, that are with other business communities, community partnerships. How important do you think that role has been, either of you jump in here, for especially as we're looking at what we've seen with the state funding situation, how much are other organizations and stakeholders and businesses trying to fill the place of that funding?
Well, Nyla, I'm going to jump in on this. It's not either or. It's two faces of the same coin. We need improvements in policy, and we need substantial improvements in funding directed toward low-income students. At the same time, funding itself and what happens in the schools itself is not enough to increase educational attainment in the state. The communities have a responsibility to kind of give a leg up to their students. So that's why it's particularly important to energize communities around these idea of education collaboratives that involve business and the nonprofit sector.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. We're talking about Advance Illinois' report that's come out recently looking at the state of education. It covers all the way from early childhood to post-secondary. When we come back, we're going to have a quick conversation about our public universities as well with Harry Berman. He's the former executive director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education, and Ginger Ostro, who's executive director of Advance Illinois. They're on the line with us from our partner station, WUIS in Springfield. Stay tuned. You're listening to the 21st. As always, if you follow our Twitter account, it's 21ST Show. We're tweeting out more information and context about what we're talking about right now about this report on Advance Illinois. So follow us there on Twitter and stay tuned. You're Listening to The 21st, I'm Nyla Boodoo. Right now, we're talking about the state of Illinois' educational system. We're talking about a report from Advance Illinois that asks the question, is Illinois' education system on track? With us from our partner station, WUIS in Springfield, Ginger Ostro is Executive Director of Advance Illinois. Harry Berman's also with her. He's on the board of Advance Illinois. He's also the former Executive Director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Yesterday, I wanted to play something for you. Yesterday, we had former Illinois Governor Jim Edgar on The 21st. We were actually talking to him about the ongoing budget stalemate situation in Springfield. He said he's concerned about the effects this is going to have on higher education.
You know, when I was governor, I spent a lot of time talking to CEOs and things in the state. You know, one of the things they told me that was very important to them, they wanted stability from state government. They wanted to know what was going to happen. The number one thing was education. And they particularly pointed out our higher education system in Illinois was one of the best in the nation. And that was a big plus for them as far as being in Illinois, expanding in Illinois. And I worry that, you know, the damage that's been done in the last year and a half to higher education is it'll take many years to rebuild that.
As we're thinking about the state of particularly public higher education in Illinois, Harry, I wonder, as you're hearing former Illinois Governor Jim Edgar share those thoughts he had with us yesterday on the program, what are you thinking about what's going through your head when you're thinking about the current budget stalemate and the damage that this past year, this past 18 months have had on the state of higher education throughout Illinois?
Well, I share the governor's concern. And one of the great privileges about being on the board of Advance Illinois is that Governor Edgar, along with Bill Daley, are the honorary chairs of the organization. You know, Nyla, what we're going through now is unprecedented and is leading to long-term damage to what had been one of the absolute top higher education systems in the country. That said, the universities are doing their best to keep moving forward and to implement changes that will improve educational outcomes for their students. And they're doing that in the face of having many students who would have attended Illinois institutions going to other states. But we still have the students who are going to our public universities in Illinois. A few moments ago, I mentioned that there are things that universities can do, our universities can do, to improve the proportion of students who actually graduate. And there's been a lot of discussion fostered by the Illinois Board of Higher Education about what those steps are. And mentioned very briefly, reforming remedial education. For example, having remedial courses linked to credit-bearing courses and having students enroll at the same time in both the remedial and the credit-bearing course. Intrusive advising, making sure that advisors are reaching out to students who are maybe floundering in those first weeks of going to college. Academic maps, something as simply as advising charts. If you're in a certain major, this is what you need to do. Full-time attendance. It turns out that going to school full-time increases the likelihood that you actually will graduate. So these are steps that our institutions are adopting. We know that they work from examples across the country, and we just have to keep pushing forward in the face of the funding uncertainty. Now, the governor mentioned stability. Couldn't agree with that more. And the Board of Higher Education last spring came out with a proposal for a compact with the legislature that would stabilize funding kind of in exchange for some improvements in administration and reductions in administrative costs. We need something like that in order to maintain and restore our position in the country as one of the leading states for higher education.
And do you feel like we've lost that position in the past few years, Harry?
Well, I regret to say that the empirical data demonstrates that. You know, one of the things that we were so noted for was our monetary award program. That's the aid program to attend college for low-income students. 15 years ago,
right, 2001. That's commonly called the MAP program.
The MAP
for
program,
people. Right.
Go ahead. It's only 15 years ago, 2001, that a student who was eligible because of low income for a MAP award could receive the amount that was needed to attend college full-time and and that all the students who were eligible could receive those awards. Now, here we are now, not only is the MAP funding uncertain, but for the past several years, the money has run out long before the number of eligible students could be funded, and the proportion of the MAP award that covers tuition has reduced. In other words, the MAP award no longer covers full tuition at our public universities. So we're in a situation which is painful to those of us who have spent our careers in higher education, in public higher education in Illinois.
Ginger, one last question for you. Just as we've been discussing this report with a focus, obviously, on lower-income students, how we've found at every level, how this population across Illinois, the gap that exists. And I just wonder, especially in the context of the current crisis with the state budget and funding, as we've been discussing stability, whether it's higher education or early childhood and seats that are available for those children. I wonder what you think the impact has been on low-income students across Illinois this year and what you're most worried about come January.
I think there has been significant impact, as we've seen across the system and as our report highlights. We really look at what's happening from pre-K through the K-12 system through post-secondary, and you can see at every step of the process, there aren't enough seats for low-income students in important pre-K programs. We've seen that in the K-12 funding system, the schools that need the most resources aren't getting more resources because of our broken funding formula. As Harry just highlighted, the MAP funding has been declining. As the number of eligible students has been increasing and isn't even enough to provide support. So we're seeing separate from the immediate budget crisis, which is having urgent impact right now, long-term trends that are just going in the wrong direction, and we're not doing enough to help our state overall or our low-income students succeed. And I think that's the real challenge and what we're really trying to highlight in this report. If we want to be ready for the jobs of the future, if we want to achieve the stability and attract employers, as Governor Edgar spoke about, we need to have a rigorous, integrated education system that helps students from birth through post-secondary to ensure that all students are succeeding.
That's Ginger Ostro. She's Executive Director of Advance Illinois. I want to thank also Harry Berman, former Executive Director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education, also on the board of Advance Illinois. We'll tweet out all of the information about this report if you'd like to read it more thoroughly. Ginger, Harry, thank you for being with me.
Thank you, Nala.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. It's the 56th year that students at Schneider Hall at the University of Illinois are singing holiday songs on demand. How does it work? Well, you just call them up, like I did yesterday.
Hi, thank you for calling Dial Carol. This is Katie. May I ask who I'm speaking with?
Hi, Katie. This is Nyla from The 21st Show.
Fantastic. What song can I sing for you?
Can you sing me a medley of whatever you want to sing?
A medley? How do you feel about I'll Be Home for Christmas? And I can do a little bit of It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas.
That sounds great.
Okay, great. Sorry if it's a little bit loud. We got a lot of Christmas spirit going on in here.
That's not a bad thing.
Okay, here's your carol, Nyla. I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan.
It's really cool to see how a lot of people from different backgrounds and different ages are all coming together to share the Christmas joy with people all over the world. We've gotten calls from Asia, Africa, Australia, Europe, and of course, you know, here in the United States, some people even here in Schneider Hall.
I'm Sydney Finkelstein. I'm a freshman at U of I. I found an ad online and it said it was a 56-year tradition, so I just figured, why not be a part of U of I's traditions?
Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm a freshman in chemical engineering. You know, the people are very supportive, even though I'm not the best singer, and I can tell I'm making them happy, so it's nice.
Everywhere you go.
It's been pretty hectic. We started Thursday at midnight, and since then we've gotten close to, 4,100 calls at this point.
A group of four faculty members came in and sat across from us, and at first it was a little awkward because it's faculty and students right next to each other, not in a faculty-student situation. Within a few minutes, though, we started joking around with them and having fun and joining in their songs, and they started joining in ours. One song that we sang was All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey.
I don't want a lot for Christmas,
There is just one thing I need, and I
don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree.
I just want you for my own, more than you could ever know. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is you.
This is a great way to avoid studying for finals.
Beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store. But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Did you enjoy your carol today?
That was awesome. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks to Hala Delihi for producing that audio postcard for us. Dialect Carol, it's an annual tradition that started at the U of I in 1960. And since 12:01 a.m. last Thursday until midnight tomorrow night, the students have been singing for anyone who calls. That voice that you just heard singing to me, Katie Turchka, the person who answered the phone, is in studio with us today. She's a senior in the Department of Recreation, Sport, and Tourism at the U of I, and she's here with two other carols, fellow students Chris Kennedy and Eric Connolly. Chris is a senior in journalism. Eric is a junior in engineering physics. Hey guys, thanks for taking time on finals week to come talk to me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks so much for having us.
Katie, this is your third year doing Dialect Carol. You guys have received more than 7,800 calls so far. I know even Illinois politicians have called you. Senator Mark Kirk's office called. You were on speaker at Macy's headquarters. You've been doing interviews for British radio stations. Why do you like doing this?
I love it because it's very much spreading the cheer of Christmas. I have always really loved the Christmas season, and being able to share that with other people is something that I really love.
And Chris, is this one of those things where it's kind of like you're in the Elf movie school of singing, where it's sort of like you just want to sing loud and spread holiday cheer? Or how much is everyone's musical ability factor?
No, that's not a big factor. Sometimes I pick up the phone and I want to say, Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color? It's it's really just... It doesn't really matter how out of pitch or out of key you are. It's just really spreading that holiday cheer and with no inhibitions.
And Chris, you've been doing this for 4 years, your entire time at the U of I. What call kind of stands out to you the most?
Oh, boy. Well, you get a lot of fun. Like, it's always fun to be on the radio, like right now. Like, you get a lot of morning shows, a lot of people calling in Morning Drive, and that's awesome. And I've been on the radio in, like, Canada and the UK, like you mentioned. And then you also get, like, I don't know, like this morning we had a call as a woman who said she called and then she shared it with our friends and they called, and it was, I don't know, a woman who was a cancer patient. She told me how much it meant to that woman, how much it brightened her day that to get a Christmas carol, and how her holiday season, well, it might not have been the brightest, then we add a little light to it. And so I think those are the most important calls, is when you see that impact, I guess.
That's great. Eric, you told us before the show, Dialect Carol has been a big part of your college experience. How does it help, especially finals week? I imagine there's a lot of engineering physics finals you're kind of facing right now.
As exams start creeping up, the stress starts building and building. And for me, there's no better stress reliever than spreading a little joy to other people's lives. Gets my mind off of finals and more on to what I want to do, making other people filled with the holiday spirit.
Chris, by the way, you have a lot of energy because you just came off of a 12-hour shift, right? What keeps you going during these long shifts? You just did like a 12-hour shift for Dialect Carol.
Yeah, there's definitely doldrums around like 4 in the morning. But
there's not a lot of people calling at 4 in the morning.
No. But I don't know, once the calls start rolling in, like I said, with the morning shows around like 5 in the morning, that's what keeps you going, is that you're on the phone, you hang up, and you see it ringing again, and you're like, I have to be as jolly and merry as I was at the last call and give these people as great a song and do as much as I can for their Christmas season as I did for the last one.
Okay, so why don't we go out with you guys singing a song for us? I'm going to let you guys pick, because normally you guys, I'm sure, get lots of requests. What are you guys going to sing for us?
Well, I am partial to Santa Claus is Coming to Town. So
all right.
You go right with that?
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
All right. One, two, three. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake.
Oh, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm
That's Chris Kennedy,
why.
Eric Connolly, and Katie Turschka singing for us. Thanks, you guys. That was so great. Katie Turschka, Chris Kennedy, Eric Connolly, they are with Dial a Carol. You can call that number. We'll tweet it out. It'll be on our website as well. You have been listening to The 21st. We're a production of Illinois Public Media. Have a great day.